these new people are a cross between us and a cockroach. My, my, it's gotten mighty quiet all of a sudden.
That's the past, dead and buried. You said you were going to tell us the future.
It is the future. Your future, Mr. Half-Blind. I don't create it. I can't change it. I only see it with these useless eyes of mine.
A mesmer you are not. Evidence, madam. We require substantial and convincing evidence of your claims.
Oh, I'll give you all the evidence you need. There's a brand new star in the sky. Hasn't been a new star like that in more than 100 years.
We wouldn't know anything about that. We haven't seen the night sky for almost 2 weeks now.
Well, you'll all see it tonight over the river. It's not a proper star, mind you. It doesn't twinkle like it should. And it sails from one side of the horizon to the other in the span of 20 heartbeats. This star was planted in the heavens by a roaring, flaming spear, taller than the tallest tree in the forest.
She means a goddamn guided missile, Ryan. A recon satellite.
Damn. That only means one thing.
Mr. Carter, the cockroaches are already here. They are many, and there will be hell to pay.
If you really can see into the future, then explain it to us in detail.
Even if I went over it minute by minute, it wouldn't help you. Preparations are a waste of precious time. I've lived with the doomy sight since I was your boy's age, and I know this for a certain fact. No one can change the course of what will be. My advice to all of you is to enjoy each passing moment as if it were your last.
In other words, we're going to suffer and die, but be sure and have a nice day. That's all she's going to tell us? Why are we listening to this bullshit?
I heartily agree. Might I suggest that our passing moments might be more enjoyable spent away from the confines of this cramped and stinking hovel?
You got that right, Doc.
Wait, Master Carter!
What?
Before you go, I have a gift for you.
From under her translucent cape, Cyrena produced a slim, 6-inch bone dagger in a skin sheath.
Dad?
Go ahead, son.
The boy approached the old woman and took the dagger from her. There was no crossguard or pommel. The handle was wrapped with strips of scratchy fish skin. Unsheathing the blade, he carefully tested its serrated edge on the back of his thumbnail.
Demon sharp!
It's made from the tip of a catfish dorsal spine. It will fit nicely into the top of your right boot.
Dean tried it. The blade and sheath disappeared completely.
I can hardly feel it's there. Thanks.
Cyrena reached out and seized his wrist in a grip that was amazingly strong.
What are you doing?
I could have told you your future and your children's future, too, if you just sat on my lap.
Maybe you could. And maybe I don't want to know that bad.
It was nearly midnight when Ryan saw it, in the tree break over the dark river. The single point of bright light appeared in the west, above the blankness of the canopy, and swept across the starry field of sky. He and the others watched the satellite arc overhead and vanish in the east.
Fire blast.
Couldn't it be something else, Dad? Something real old, from before Skydark?
It isn't old, Dean. All the space junk fell to Earth and burned up a long time ago. It has to be new. The fish hag spoke the truth. People from the other Earth had to have put it up there. No one else could have done it.
We should have chilled those four bastards. Should have buried them along with all their fancy chilling gear.
JB was talking about the Turncoats, the members of the first scouting expedition to cross over from the parallel Earth. With success within their grasp, the warrior Whitecoats had decided not just to abandon, but to sabotage their primary mission, which was to lay the groundwork for the invasion and conquest of Deathlands by the armies of Five. Instead of firing the guided missile they had trucked with them into the sky, they launched it through the reality portal in the hope of sealing the gateway forever. That done, the alternate world conquistadors went native, They stripped off the segmented black battle suits that made them immune to blaster fire, and they dumped the tri-barreled laser rifles that cut through plate steel like so much tissue paper. Ryan and the others helped them dismantle their gyroplane, and they buried it deep in a sandy arroyo, along with the rest of their gear.
Colonel Gabhardt and the others might not have had anything to do with this, John. Maybe they had blood relatives starving to death on the other side. Blood being thicker than water, they decided to reopen the passageway and save them.
However it happened, Mildred, they're here. The question is, what are we going to do about it?
All eyes turned to Ryan.
What?
He was the only one who'd seen the other world, and though he'd tried to describe its bleakness and horror, mere words couldn't do it justice. They stuck in his throat like slivers of glass. The new cause that had laid waste to Deathlands was an accident, an instantaneous, one-time event. But the alternate end to history that Ryan had witnessed was the final outcome of a civilization that had attacked nature as if it were a sworn enemy. There was nothing left on the parallel Earth but human beings and the avalanche of disasters their science had brought to life. They were indeed like two-legged cockroaches, indomitable breeders, surviving at all costs, consuming and destroying every living thing and every resource within their reach. In his mind, Ryan could see gleaming, hard-shelled black armies pouring through the parted lips of the reality corridor. Armies carrying weapons and technology that nothing in Deathlands could match. Armies so vast that even without advanced weapons, they could defeat any force the people of Deathlands could field against them. Running away only postponed the inevitable. With an eye in the sky endlessly circling and searching their world, there was no safe place to hide. Fate had left Ryan and his companions one choice, and it was bad.
Shit. We've got to go back to Moonboyville.
Right.
To enter battle with a slight possibility of victory was one thing. To walk willingly into the spinning blades of a meat grinder was another. Ryan thought about the village man who'd death-marched himself to meet the catfish's impaling spine. Cyrena had told the poor bastard his fate, and he'd surrendered to it. Just as they were about to do. A rag securely tied over his nose and mouth, Dr. Huth stopped hacking at the hard pan with the blade of his shovel. Abandoning the shovel, Huth climbed the side of Byramville's defensive berm for a look. As he scaled the mound of dirt, his feet slipped around inside the oversized jogging shoes he wore, despite the plastic bags he'd wadded up in their toe boxes. His polyester pants were as stiff as cardboard, not because they were new. Their rigidity came from the black blood that starched the lap's thighs and shins. The pants were cinched tight around his waist with a length of frayed electrical cord. To earn a dead man's trouser and shoes, Huth had dug latrines barefoot and in his underpants for 3 days. He was still digging latrines. A mile away, a wag emerged from the dust devils that spun across the ruined interstate. It approached the lone opening in the Bill's mounted perimeter wall. The vehicle, originally a small school bus, was painted in garish pink, green, yellow, red, a chaos of spray can squiggles and overlain abstract shapes. Even the sides of the tires and wheels were painted. Belching black smoke from its exhaust, the wag stopped at the security checkpoint, which consisted of a breach in the berm that was partially blocked by a heap of junked vehicles. The all-volunteer sec force emerged from behind that rusting barrier.
Stop! Stop right there!
The bus's side door opened at once, and the sec men climbed inside to make sure it didn't conceal armed killers trying to loot the compound. These sec men never robbed or extorted wayfarers themselves. Robbery and extortion were left to the 24-hour gaudy house and the 7 days-a-week swap meet. The hell pit of Byramville, whose smoke plume Huth had first seen from atop the Red Mesa, had grown up around a pre-dark truck stop. At the enclosure's center were the remains of a service station, restaurant, and mini-mart. The great steel awnings that had once shielded the rows of junked fuel pumps from the sun had been torn off by Skydark's 200-mile-per-hour shockwave. The original roof of the one-story structure had likewise vanished, the plate-glass windows turned to twinkling fairy dust. Roof and windows had been crudely repaired with sheets of metal stripped from the abandoned and overturned semi-trailers that littered the huge parking area. These aging artifacts of long-dead interstate commerce were the very heart and soul of the place. Byramville's upper crust lived inside the trailers and conducted their businesses out of them. The poorer residents kept house in the rusting hulks of passenger cars. The lowest of the low, Huth included, slept curled up on the ground like mongrel dogs.